Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. This is a day that feels like spring. It's going to get up to 60 degrees today. Anyway, you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so excited to be here with you today. I have a great show planned. Dr. Neil Barnard, president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and author of many books, but his new book, Your Body in Balance, will be coming on in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, some ways that you can take action, and of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So first, I just want to remind everybody who doesn't know and tell those that are hearing this for the first time that this Saturday is the Long Island Community Supported Agricultural Fair, the CSA Fair. And if you don't know what a CSA is, a CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it is a way to become part of a community of a farm. It is actually where you buy a membership to purchase your vegetables at the beginning of the season, and you pay for the whole summer or the whole season up front. But what that means is then for the whole season, every week you get what feels like a free box of in-season organically harvested vegetables that you either pick up at the farm or you pick up from a drop-off point. Some even have delivery services depending on your needs. But one of the reasons we are bringing over 20 farmers together for this CSA fair is so that you can really walk around and meet the farmers and shop around for the program that best suits your family needs. If you are a large family, you need a full share. If you are just a couple, you might want a half share. You might want a half share, and some farms do a half share where you get your box every other week. Some do a box every week, but half the amount. You need to find what works for you. Some CSAs offer add-ons. You can get flowers, you can get eggs, you can get cheese, you can get fresh bread. And some only offer the vegetables they grow. So you really need to look around and shop around and see which plan works for you. Some of the farms offer payment plans so that if paying all up front would be a burden to you, there may be a way to work with the farmer. And that's why it's so nice to have them all in one place where you can come and walk around and meet them. We're setting it up outdoors like a farmer's market so that we will be able to maintain social distancing and everybody is required to wear a mask. So it will be a safe outdoor event, but it will be so nice to see everybody. We've all been indoors for a year now, isolating, and it is just going to be wonderful to be outdoors and see our community together. We also have arranged for the Green Street food truck to be there. That's a vegan, gluten-free truck that will be there serving some delicious food. We also have 10 Coffee. They will be serving their coffee, and we have the Green Street, Mike's knife sharpening truck there. So if you have dull knives from all the cooking you've been doing, bring your knives to the event and you can have them sharpened. So this will just be a really wonderful event from 11 to 3 at the Sisters of St. Joseph in Brentwood. You can go onto the Slow Food North Shore website to find out more about it, or my website. There's information there. Also, NOFA New York is also a sponsor. And NOFA New York will have a table there as well as Slow Food and IE Green, but NOFA New York is actually promoting a new program on Long Island where we have funding to help farmers transition to organic. So if we have any farmers coming who are thinking about transitioning to organic, but the financial burden has been too much, we have an answer for you. NOFA will help you with that. So please, come on out to the CSA fair. And some things that I want to tell you about for taking action. On my website, I have petitions to help let the Biden-Harris administration know that we want them to shut down the Dakota Access Pipeline and also Line 3 pipelines. The Biden administration has already closed down the tar sands pipeline, which, back many years ago, I protested there along with Bill McKibben and actually got arrested for my first time in that protest. But pipelines are just bad news. They always leak. These pipelines actually are violating decades-old treaties with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and the Anantashi people. And it's just not a good thing. We need to move away from gas and oil energy and move towards more renewable energies, and getting off of these pipelines is a way of doing that. So we need to really push the new administration towards a more sustainable, renewable future. There's also a bill in Congress, or a proposed bill, called the Protect America's Children from Toxic Pesticide Act. That's a no-brainer. We want to keep pesticides away from our children and from all people. We need to protect our children, our farm workers, and of course our pollinators and all living beings from the toxic effects of pesticides. And this bill would do that. So please sign the petition and let us send that off to the Biden administration. Also, I want to share with you some good news. New York State passed a law that is requiring all supermarkets and grocery stores to donate any extra food. I don't know if any of you saw the films Food Waste and I'm forgetting the name of the film, but there was a great film that Slow Food showed about the amount of food that is dumped in dumpsters that's thrown out, and how some supermarkets actually would like pour bleach over the food they were dumping out just to make it impossible for people who are hungry to take that good food that they were throwing out of the dumpster. It is amazing how much food is thrown out. When a shipment comes into a supermarket, if they already have a bunch of yogurt or milk and a new batch comes in, they don't want the new batch to get old. So they just throw out what they have there. And it all ends up in the dumpster, into our landfill, creating methane, and it's just bad. Meanwhile, more than 50 million Americans are struggling with food insecurity. This is just a bill that is a win-win. It will, actually not a bill, I'm sorry, it's a law. And this law will go into effect in June. So it's really very exciting. I have been supporting Community Solidarity for years, which is an organization that has been collecting food that is going to be thrown out from supermarkets like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's for years and distributing it to those in need. And now all supermarkets will be required to do that. So that's really great. I also just want to encourage everybody to think about planting your garden. This is the time to start waking your garden up. If you've had straw covering your garden or leaves, it's time to start raking that off and adding some compost to your garden. If you're going to start any plants inside, you want to get that going. So anyway, it's time to start thinking about your garden if you're going to grow a garden. And that is, another way, along with CSA, of getting good organic vegetables. So I have a whole list on my website of some of my favorite places to get seeds. I also have some contacts for getting some red squiggly worms or some worm castings, if you'd like to add that, some organic compost. Also drip irrigation. I've put that into my garden, and that's really been wonderful to be able to set a timer to have your garden watered if you're going to be away. So all that is on my website at IE Green, so check it out. It's now my pleasure to share with you my recipe this week. I made some sweet potato muffins with a crumb topping. These are vegan and gluten-free, and they're also good for the FODMAP. And basically gluten-free, most people who are on a FODMAP diet, which is people who are struggling with irritable bowel syndrome, very often they go on this diet called a FODMAP diet, which is very limiting. And a lot of gluten-free flours use chickpea flour or other bean flours in their mix. And that's really not good if someone is really struggling with irritable bowel. So this is vegan, and I picked a gluten-free flour that did not have any Bisan flour, which is chickpea flour, in it. So if you don't have a problem with gluten, of course you can use regular flour in this recipe and it still will come out great. So first I'm going to read to you the ingredient list and then how to do it. But know that this recipe actually makes 36 muffins. So if that's too much for you, you can cut it in half. But I usually am always cooking for so many people and they freeze really well. So you can make a big batch and put some in the freezer. So I make a vegan egg, and I do that with 2 tablespoons of ground chia seeds mixed with 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar and 2 tablespoons of water. And just let that sit in a little bowl for a while, and that would become kind of glutinous and kind of help stick this whole recipe together. 2 cups of sweet potatoes. I just steamed my sweet potatoes and then mashed them up, and I believe it was 3 sweet potatoes made, or no, maybe it was 4, made 2 cups. 1 cup of maple syrup. 1/2 cup of organic or coconut oil. You can also substitute another oil if you prefer. I used 1 cup of applesauce, and that was a way of minimizing how much oil I put into the recipe. If you can't eat applesauce, you can, you know, up the amount of oil a little bit. 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1 tablespoon baking powder, 2 teaspoons salt, 2 tablespoons baking soda, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1 teaspoon ginger, 1 teaspoon nutmeg, 1 teaspoon allspice, 1 cup of ground walnuts, 1 cup of tapioca flour, 1 1/2 cups of gluten-free flour, 1 cup of gluten-free oats that I ground up so it was kind of like a very coarse flour, and 1/2 cup of organic coconut. For the crumb topping, I used 1/4 cup maple syrup, 1/4 cup gluten-free flour, 1/4 cup gluten-free oats. These I did not ground. I used the whole oats. 3 tablespoons organic oil, 1/2 teaspoon cinnamon, and 1/2 cup of walnuts, chopped fine, but not completely ground up. So for the procedure to do it, you're going to, like I said, mix the chia seeds in that little bowl. In another bowl, combine all the dry ingredients. In another bowl, combine all the wet ingredients, and then add that chia seed mixture into the wet ingredients. Add the dry ingredients into the wet mixture, and I used a whisk to just mix that all up. I prepared some muffin tins with some cupcake liners, and I filled each of the muffin cups 2/3 full. And then for the crumb topping, I just mixed all those ingredients together in another bowl. And I sprinkled the crumb topping on top, and I baked them at 350 for about 20 minutes or until you can check it with a toothpick or a knife into the center and it should come out clean. And that's how you know they're finished. And they are just delicious. So as always, if you do get to make them, please let me know how you like them. I always love some feedback. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Dr. Neil Barnard. He's the president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and author of Your Body in Balance, New Science of Food, Hormones, and Health. And Dr. Neil Barnard is an adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University of Medicine in Washington, D.C., and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He has led numerous research studies investigating the effects of diet on diabetes and body weight and chronic pain, including a groundbreaking study of dietary interventions in type 2 diabetes, which was funded by the National Institutes of Health. And that paved the way for viewing type 2 diabetes as a potentially reversible condition for many patients. Dr. Barnard has authored more than 90 scientific publications and 20 books for medical and lay readers. And he's the editor-in-chief of the Nutrition Guide for Clinicians, which is a textbook that's made available to all US medical students, which is so important because so many medical students get so little nutrition guidance in school. As president of the Physicians Committee, Dr. Barnard leads programs advocating for preventive medicine, good nutrition, and higher ethical standards in research. His research contributed to the acceptance of plant-based diets in the dietary guidelines for Americans. In 2015, he was named a fellow of the American College of Cardiology. And in 2016, he founded the Barnard Medical Center in Washington, D.C. as a model for making nutrition a routine part of all medical care. And I'm so excited to have you on. Dr. Barnard, are you with me? Dr. Barnard, are you there? I don't hear you. I don't seem to have any sound. Dr. Barnard, are you with me?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. So thank you so much for joining me this morning. I know you're so busy, but it's just great to have you on because I have so many listeners that care so much about what you do.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Sure. So let's start by talking a little bit about the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. When was that founded?
The Physicians Committee began in 1985, and we were intending to start out as a small doctors group that would advise on the issues of the day, but we have grown quite a lot. We now have about 17,000 doctors who belong and quite a few lay people who support our work as well.
It's great, especially right now with, you know, the COVID epidemic and people, you know, wondering where it came from. There's so many different theories, you know. Of course, the live animal markets and labs and all that work that you're doing is just so instrumental in hoping to prevent another pandemic like this.
Yes, let's hope so.
Yeah. So you you recently had some research published in the Journal of American College of Nutrition that showed a vegan diet as being superior to a Mediterranean diet. Can you talk about that?
Yes. You know, so many people will go to a Mediterranean diet because they hear it's easy and you don't really have to give anything up. And frankly, it sounds kind of romantic. You know, you can have a sunset dinner on the coast of Italy and have a glass of red wine with your fish fillet or something like that. And in fact, it's been rated as sort of the top diet by U.S. News and World Report, and everybody goes to it. But a lot of people have been very disappointed that they do all that. And if they went to the diet to try to lose weight or get their cholesterol down, nothing happens. So we decided to actually put it to a good organized test. And 62 people who wanted to lose weight joined the study. Half of them went Mediterranean, half of them went vegan. They did it for 16 weeks. And then we put everybody on the scale and checked their cholesterol and blood pressure and so forth. And then they switched to the opposite diet. So if they've been doing vegan, they now started Mediterranean. If they've been doing Mediterranean, they went vegan for another 16 weeks. So every single participant was able to test both diets and they had a sense of which one would work. And the results were just quite dramatic. On the vegan diet, people lost weight, which is what they do. The average person lost about 6 kilograms over 16 weeks. So what's that? It's about, call it maybe 13, 14 pounds over 16 weeks, which is good. The average person on the Mediterranean diet lost 0.0 pounds. It was like terrible. And the participants got really frustrated with it. And that's what happens when you're eating fish and some eggs and some meat and some oil, and your weight just doesn't change. So yes, it's the now don't get me wrong. Mediterranean diet, very sustainable. But what it sustains is your girth. What it sustains is your cholesterol level, and you don't want that. And a vegan diet is dramatically more effective.
Mm-hmm. And this, your most recent book, which I have right here, Your Body in Balance, New Science of Food, Hormones, and Health, discusses the impact food has on your hormones. How did you discover that foods could help hormone-related problems? And also, if someone has been dealing with a hormone problem with pills and wants to try to now switch back to fixing the problem with food, how do you get off the pills and make the food work? And I'll share that personally with you because I have the thyroid situation where I've been on thyroid medicine for so many years and have been trying to go off it. I've been vegan now and, you know, I'm curious how to, you know, kickstart my thyroid to work again after I've kind of like made it be lazy and not work for so long.
Yeah, sure. This is really the new corner that we're turning in medicine where it used to be, we thought, well, I'll eat an unhealthy food and I'll get a disease. So I'm eating sausage, the cholesterol is going to give me a heart attack, or I'm eating bacon and that will cause colon cancer. And there's truth to that. But what we now appreciate is that there are a number of hormones that control basically everything in your body. Thyroid hormone is one, where it's the thyroid at the base of the neck makes thyroid hormone that goes to the cells of the body and gives you energy. Or the ovaries make estrogen, or in a man's body, the testes make testosterone. And all these hormones go through the bloodstream and they change how you feel and they change your health in a great many ways. And nobody knew how to control them. Well, we now have a lot of information about how to change them through what you eat. And one of, and this touches on many different areas. Take, for example, estrogens, female sex hormones. If they are out of balance, earlier in life, during a woman's reproductive years, they will, if estrogens are out of balance, you'll end up with menstrual cramps, heavy bleeding, a lot of pain, or endometriosis. And that is something where diet can play a huge role, because by increasing the fiber content of the diet, getting rid of fat, getting rid of dairy, you can calm down the estrogen excesses that are driving those problems. Then at the other end of the reproductive window, at menopause, when women have hot flashes, that's something where we use a different approach, where we get away from animal products, we keep oils low, but we can also take advantage of soy isoflavones, which are natural compounds that instead of increasing cancer risk, which estrogen pills will do, they actually reduce cancer risk quite substantially. And so we use this combination of a healthy diet, meaning vegan, very low fat, but also maybe about a half cup of whole soybeans per day. And for some women, they find it absolutely life changing and their hot flashes go way down and they can sleep at night again and it just feels great.
And when you say half a cup of soybeans, does tofu count, or tofu is now a processed food, so it doesn't count?
Well, tofu is great. And the processing of a soybean into tofu doesn't mean that it's not a nutritious food. It's a great food, and it's a traditional food in China and Japan that have had enviable health for a long period of time. In fact, there is no Japanese word for hot flashes. Researchers have studied exactly this. Back in the 1980s, Margaret Locke from McGill University in Canada went to Japan and interviewed 1,200 women and found that hot flashes were quite rare compared to in Canada or compared to the United States. And then later, when Japan westernized and started eating less and less rice and more meat and dairy had not been a traditional part of the diet at all.
Right. Really.
And then starting in kind of the 60s, 70s, 80s, it came in. Dairy has estrogens in it and started causing all kinds of havoc. And so with this westernization, we have seen much more breast cancer, more diabetes, more weight problems, and a lot more hot flashes. When researchers took another look a few decades later, now Japanese women are reporting hot flashes really quite commonly, rather like American women. So anyway, make a long story short, I don't ask women to just take this on faith. Let's say a woman is listening to this now, and she's having hot flashes, and she's having several of them during the day, and maybe even at night, where she's awakened from sleep, and she's in a sweat at night, and then she gets up the next day and doesn't really feel like herself because she didn't sleep well. Let me encourage you to just try this as an experiment. You don't have to believe in it. You don't have to believe in penicillin. You just have to take it and try it. So try this as an experiment. For the next, say, 3 months, just try no animal products at all. You're going to be vegan. So there'll be no animal products in your diet. That's number one. Number two, keep oils really low. So we're not going to eat a lot of greasy stuff. And that means cooking oils. It means peanut butter. Keep that really low. 3, have a half a cup of cooked soybeans every day. You can order them online. They can be organic or non-GMO. Get an Instapot or some kind of pressure cooker, and you just batch cook them. And that's it, which takes, 40 minutes. And then separate them into little food containers and have a half a cup every day. Or you can roast them. After you cook them up, put them in your oven on some parchment paper at about 350 degrees for about an hour, and they're roasted. Throw them on a salad, throw them in your soups. They're delicious. And so the combination, vegan, low oil, half a cup of cooked soybeans every day, and just see. At the end of, say, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, see what happens. I'm quite prepared to believe this won't work for everybody, but we have been working with a lot of women, and for many, it is absolutely life-changing. Hot flashes going way, way down. You sleep through the night. You feel better. Many other things go away. GERD, reflux, extra weight. All of these problems will improve or even just go away for a great many people.
Mm-hmm. But tofu or tempeh would not count as cooked soybeans.
That was the question you asked, and I kind of skipped away from it. Yes, tofu counts. Tofu is fine, but have the half cup of cooked whole soybeans in addition to your tofu.
Okay.
Because the amount of isoflavones in the tofu is not as much as in a whole soybean.
Okay.
But tofu is fine. There's nothing wrong with tofu. It is A-okay, and it beats that. If you're having scrambled eggs every morning, you're getting a big cholesterol pill all kind of scrambled in your pan. Throw that out and scramble tofu instead. It has exactly the taste and consistency of egg white. And so you just scramble that. It's got zero cholesterol, no animal fat. You can flavor it up with all kinds of flavorings.
I have recipes for scrambled tofu on my website. Yeah,
yes, I do. It's one of the things people are afraid of until they taste it made well. And then they discover it's just addictive. People just love it. So off you go.
Yeah. And, even putting a little turmeric in there just to make it a little yellow for that visual thing really helps as well.
Yeah. And that adds to the taste as well. Some people put some onions, diced onions in their pan, or a little garlic even, before the tofu goes in, brown them a little bit. A little bit of black pepper, I think, goes very well in there too. Some people like to cut up other vegetables and combine them. They'll combine them sometimes with some potatoes, sort of like a hash brown kind of mix. Have fun, experiment. Yeah. It will never turn out bad. It's always going to be fine.
Yeah. And so what about, my question about going back to the thyroid, if you have been on thyroid medicine, does that kill your thyroid from doing what it's supposed to do? Because it becomes lazy. Now it's doing it's getting it from the medication. And then when you want to go off the medication, how do you re-kick your thyroid into action?
We need more research on thyroid disease. We really don't know all of the answers here, but let me tell you what we do know. There are two reasons why people have too little thyroid hormone. One is they're not getting enough iodine. Iodine is this element that's in the earth, and it provides the substance for making thyroid hormone. If you don't have iodine, you can't make thyroid hormone. You're going to be hypothyroid. Worldwide, that's the most common reason. In the US, it's not so common because 100 years ago, the Morton Company started selling iodized salt in those blue containers with the girl and the umbrella. and so everyone was suddenly getting iodine. But what's happened over the last 10 years or so is people are using sea salt, or Himalayan salt, or kosher salt that often is not iodized. Some of them are, but if it does not say iodized, then it isn't. And so people are missing it. In Japan, people get huge amounts of iodine because seaweeds are nature's source of iodine. And so that nori or wakame or these seaweeds that are used at sushi bars and miso soup and whatever, they are terrific iodine sources. And if you're avoiding all of that, you can just take an iodine supplement. You need 150 micrograms a day and see how you do. But what you're asking about might be the other cause of hypothyroidism, which is an antibody effect. Your body is making antibodies that are attacking your thyroid gland, and they're stopping it from working. And in the United States, that's the most common form, and that's called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It was named after Dr. Hashimoto. And here we have seen a lot of folks who go on a healthy diet and they discover that their hypothyroidism improves or goes away. But I hasten to say, don't throw your pills away. Don't fire your endocrinologist. Let your doctor know that you're making some diet changes. You want to see how you do, and have your doctor monitor you. If you can get away from medication, great. If you can't, then keep taking your medication. For many people, and in Your Body in Balance, I describe a number of people who have recovered from both hypothyroidism and also hyperthyroidism. And there is never a reason not to do a healthy plant-based diet. And if you got an endocrinologist, work with him or her and see what happens.
Okay. So we all know medications are overused. How do you work with your patients to encourage diet as opposed to medication? Especially now, it makes me crazy when I see all these advertisements on TV. You know, when I was younger, it wasn't legal to advertise medicine, and now, all these people are saying, oh, try this, try that. And they're going to the doctor saying, oh, what about this pill? What about that? We're teaching people to think about pills to make themselves better as opposed to food. How do we reverse that and get on the right track?
Drugs used to be thought of as things that you needed when you were sick that would help you to get well. But drugs are now largely viewed by pharmaceutical manufacturers as lifetime income for the company. In other words, what they are focusing their research on is chronic conditions where the medication is not designed to cure it. It's designed to simply manage it. And I think among the worst is diabetes, where every couple of months there's a new diabetes medication. And just as you say, they advertise on TV and they make diabetes look cool. Go for it. I've got diabetes, so I'm going to take you name it. And this is part of my new diabetes lifestyle. There is a role for medication in diabetes. There's an important role. And for some people, it's essential and sometimes life-saving. However, type 2 diabetes is not caused by a metformin deficiency. It's caused by the buildup of microscopic fat particles inside your muscle and liver cells. And I know that what I just said is totally new to most people. They never heard about this before. And this was not known before people looked into muscle cells with magnetic resonance spectroscopy and discovered, to our amazement, that the reason the person's insulin was not working anymore wasn't because they were eating sugar or something like that. It was because particles from the mayonnaise on their chicken salad sandwich, or particles of chicken fat, or particles of cheese fat, or particles of fryer grease from the foods that people eat, filtered through their bloodstream into their muscle cells and started building up. And fat built up in their liver cells. And then when insulin comes from your pancreas and parks on the surface of that muscle cell, because the cell is filled with these little microscopic fat particles, the insulin can't do anything, can't work. It cannot get the glucose inside, which is its job. And so what do? I could prescribe you metformin. I could give you insulin. We can overpower the insulin resistance that you have. How about this? How about for the next month, we take the animal products out of your diet and we keep the oils really low. And if I then do another magnetic resonance spectroscopy study afterwards, what I discover is that the fat is coming out of your cells. And as the fat comes out of your cells, your insulin can start working again. And your body returns more like what it was when you were 16. And that's when we see people who come into us. They've had diabetes for 10 years. They're on, I'm going to make it up, say 20 units of insulin. And by about 10 days in, we cut them from 20 down to 18, down to 16, down to 14, because their body is just responding again to their own insulin. And they do better and better and better. And in many cases, they get off their insulin completely. Sometimes they get off all their drugs. Sometimes the diabetes is just gone. But once again, don't fire your doctor. Do follow your doctor's guidance. Many people improve dramatically with diet changes, but some people need continuing medical care. And it's a mistake not to take advantage of that medical care if you need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, with the pandemic, we've really seen how, your the state of your health affects how the disease affects you, right? So those that are most susceptible to really having a bad outcome from the pandemic are people that have some of these pre-existing conditions. And, you know, there's so much confusion around the vaccinations, and people are just really confused. Can you shed any light onto pre-existing conditions and how, why the disease is affecting people more who have these pre-existing conditions? And then I'm also curious about your opinion on the vaccinations.
Yeah, well, let me say just right up front that I do think that masks, social distancing, good hygiene, and vaccines all have critically important roles to play. And what we are hearing about them from scientists is something that people should be paying attention to. This is important. COVID-19 is a killer. We've got to defeat this pandemic.
Right.
And those things are going to help us do it. But the role of underlying medical conditions was clear as soon as the pandemic emerged. China, New Year's Eve, 2019, the virus started its journey around the globe. And when it first took off in Wuhan and elsewhere in China, it was very clear right away that people who had excess body weight or diabetes or hypertension did much worse with the disease. If you got the disease and you did not have diabetes, your mortality was rather low. If you got the virus and you had diabetes with it, your mortality was much higher. If you had diabetes and the diabetes was in poor control, mortality from COVID-19 was 11%. If you had diabetes, but your diabetes was in really good control, mortality was reduced to 1%. So our message has been, let's do everything we can to avoid the virus. But if that virus comes into your house and you happen to inhale it, and you happen to have diabetes, it would have been really, really good if you had been on a low-fat vegan diet for some time prior to this exposure, because that will get your diabetes under dramatically better control. And the same is true if you've stopped taking your medications and so forth. Let's get current with our medical care so that our diseases, the underlying diseases, are well controlled. But yes, if everybody could take advantage of the dietary steps to tackle unwanted weight to the extent that we can, to control our blood sugar and our blood pressure to the extent that we can, this virus would not be nearly the killer that it is. And this is true across the board, but this is particularly true for those populations that have been really hard hit. I'm talking in the United States, Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, the mortality is much worse. And that is in part due to what I'm going to call structural and economic things, access to care, who is able to work from home and who is not permitted to by their job because you're driving the bus, so you're delivering mail or, you know, whatever it is. So all those structural issues are real. Another part of it, though, is that diabetes is more frequent among Black Americans compared to white Americans. And if we can help people to have access to healthy food, if people can have access to good nutritional advice and support, and if everybody gets that support, and if everybody is encouraged to follow a really healthy, low-fat, plant-based diet, then we got power, not just against diabetes, which is a long-term killer, but against COVID, which is the one where if you got diabetes, it can kill you in 14 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it is one of the things that makes me so angry is that so much focus is put on medicine and drugs, and so little of our government's energy is on re-educating people about diet and making healthy food accessible to everybody. It's infuriating to me because I know how big a difference it can make. And, that's one of the reasons I feel like universal healthcare would be so good, because then it would cost our government money to have people sick. And they would save a lot of money if they got people healthy. And then there would be an incentive to make people healthy. Right now, you know, I've become disillusioned. And, you know, I feel like, you know, it's good business. Everybody's all the same way all these different dots are connected in healthcare, you know, hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, doctors, you know, all so much is so much of our economy is built on keeping people sick.
It's unfortunate. You can go into any mid-sized community in America, and the biggest employer is now not the local car factory or something like that. The biggest employer is the local hospital. And that's been true for a number of years now in just about every community. But I have to say, I think a certain amount of skepticism about the value of diet was understandable about 40 years ago, because the diets that were being offered really weren't very good. In fact, I grew up in North Dakota, and my dad was the diabetes expert for Fargo. He worked at the Fargo Clinic. He was an internist. Diet was part of diabetes management at that time. But my dad got home at 6:15 every night and set down his medical bag. And never once did my father ever walk in the door to tell me that the diets they were using cured anybody's diabetes. Not one, never. And when I was in medical school in an internship, you know, the dietitians would sit down with the patient and say, you're overweight, let's cut your calories. And the patient looks kind of nervous and bites his lip and said, what do you mean? Well, you're eating about 2000 calories now. Tomorrow I want you to eat 1200. And the patient tries that and realizes that he's hungry. And after a Wednesday, he's going to skip that. And then we call the patient non-compliant. And our research has said, stop it. Stop focusing on how much the patient eats and so forth. Instead, focus on what they eat and bring in healthy foods, grains and beans and vegetables and fruits. When a person follows a 100% plant-based diet and they keep the oils out and they're eating foods in as healthy and natural form as they can, they're not hungry. They lose weight beautifully. Their cholesterol is coming down and their blood sugar control improves. And it's absolutely a life-changing experience. And the point is this, there was nothing wrong with that patient. That patient we labeled as non-compliant, da, 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 da. It wasn't his fault. It was the fault of a diet that just wasn't any good, that sort of defied what we know about human nature, which is that we want to eat healthy foods that will help us. So there is now no justification for the vegan skeptic approach, where people go, I don't know, I don't think my patients are gonna do it. Yeah, it'll work if you'll follow, but nobody can follow. That kind of vegan skepticism, that vegan hesitancy has got to stop. And many doctors now are promoting healthy plant-based diets, to their credit, and that's great. And many hospitals are promoting it, even the American Medical Association, as policies that are favorable toward plant-based diets and access to that kind of information for people, and they need it. But there are still, unfortunately, some doctors, dietitians, nurses, and others who have, in their value sense, oh, I don't know if I could really eat that. I don't know. I've never tasted scrambled tofu. And so they don't even offer it to the patient. Mm-hmm. If the doctor for one second thought, well, I don't really want to be injecting Lantus either. You know, why am I recommending that to my patient? I don't want to be swallowing more pills. I don't really want to swallow Lipitor if I don't need to have it. Why are we recommending these things to patients? What we really need to do is help a patient understand what a healthy diet is. Give them a pathway to test it out. Accept the fact that they're going to be a little skeptical and need some guidance and help and support. But all that you can do, we do it here. We have a primary care clinic here called the Barnard Medical Center. Everybody who comes in wants to get healthy. They're nervous about it, but our doctors, our dietitians, and our free classes make it a straight pathway to a life change that absolutely anyone can do.
Doesn't your hospital give you a hard time because now there's less surgeries and less, you know, I've talked to many doctors, you know, I've been doing this now for over 10 years interviewing doctors, and I interview doctors that are like you who care about diet. And I hear so often that, you know, they're asked to start a heart clinic at their hospital, and then they're taken off the task because all of a sudden surgeries are down and procedures are down and the hospital's not getting to do all the work that they want to do.
If my own dreams could come true, doctors would be sort of unemployed on Wednesday afternoon. Why not give them some more time off rather than have a waiting room filled with people for whom we are basically just pill factories? I don't think that's the kind of practice we want.
Yeah. Also, I think a big problem is the power of the industry with lobbying. I remember back in my studies in the 1980s, I think McGovern, was on the committee, recommending people cut meat down to a bare minimum, that meat was unhealthy. And because of the meat lobbyists, he wasn't allowed to put that on the American plate. Instead, it had to say lean and, lean meat. But they knew for a long time that meat was not good. They know that dairy, or people that know that dairy is not healthy, and yet the dairy industry has so much power. How do we get the power out of these lobbyists and this industry that is controlling what information is getting out to the American public?
What you said is exactly right, that back in the 1970s, people did say, yeah, government policies did say eat less meat. And exactly as you said, industry raises its objections and they now speak in code. You can't change the science. When people reduce their meat intake or eliminate it, their cholesterols do get better. And the number one source of bad fat, the cholesterol raising fat, is dairy. Number two is meat. But you can't say don't eat meat or don't eat dairy. What they say now, they speak in code. They say eat less saturated fat and cholesterol, but they don't want to tell you which foods have them. And so it's a way of really defeating the message. People should be told to avoid meat completely and to avoid dairy completely and to have a healthy plant-based diet. And you should supplement vitamin B12. You want it to be a healthy diet, but there is no reason to have animal products in it, and we're better off without them. But you asked, how do we control industry? Industry is changing. It used to be, if you went to see the dairy case, 1950, it was in the dairy case, dairy was there, milk was there, and everything was cow's milk. You go to the dairy case now, and what you see is rice milk, almond milk, fortified almond milk, hemp milk, oat milk, soy milk, chocolate.
Macadamia milk, right?
All this stuff. And there is cow's milk still there, but it has lost a lot of turf. And that's to the good, because the lactose intolerant person who is never going to drink that cow's milk and should not, or that person who knows that prostate cancer is fueled by dairy products and their father, like my father, had prostate cancer. You don't want to be drinking milk because that drives prostate cancer. They've got great alternatives that are right there for them. Same with the meat industry. There are veggie burgers out there and veggie sausage and veggie bacon and so forth. Some of which are kind of liberal interpretations of the original. Others a fool a meat eater. And those choices are out there. And if you look at kids these days, kids, to them, a veggie burger is as normal as French fries were when we were little. These products are everywhere now. And industry is not stupid. Industry does not particularly want to hang up cows by their legs and slit their throats. Anything that makes them money is they're happy with. So if they can make money selling soy milk or selling veggie protein sources, that's what they're going to do. So that process is changing, and it's growing year by year by year. But what we can do is patronize them. We can buy those products. We can also work with hospitals and schools that we're affiliated with, make sure they serve healthy vegan meals. And by the way, I don't mean to say they have to be commercial products. If you just serve, frankly, beans and rice, a bean chili to a kid, spaghetti with tomato sauce. These are simple foods, really inexpensive foods, and far more nutritionally appropriate for health than the meat and cheese-based versions.
Yeah. And yet when I was talking about industry, I'm a farm to school coordinator for a public school. So I'm trying to bring and introduce more vegetables into the school lunch program, although I've been on hiatus since COVID because they can't deal with thinking about vegetables They're having a hard enough time bagging lunch. But anyway, I saw the power of the French fry industry and the frozen pizza industry. You know, the backlash from Obama's healthy initiatives for school lunches took a real hit. And Michelle Obama had to stop the healthy eating part of it and just do the let's move part of it because of the backlash of the French fry industry and the pizza industry. And it made me furious, you know, and our government officials backed down so quickly.
Well, that's because there are a whole lot of voters in Nebraska and North Dakota, where I grew up, and throughout the Midwest, who are raising cattle and they're producing dairy products. They're good, honest people. But because their products have so much economic force behind them, they've got voting blocks and they've got lobbying blocks. And so they will quite rightly convince members of Congress that there's some economic power there. That said, Congress is changing too, because for every person who's making money, for every person who's making money off an unhealthy product, there are 10 people who want their kids to be healthy. And we fought this battle a generation ago with tobacco. The tobacco industry was huge. And the conglomerates who were selling it saw the writing on the wall. And they started diversifying into all kinds of other products so that they wouldn't go belly up. The meat industry knows that too. And so does the dairy industry. So they are buying into other kinds of products. They are diversifying too. And that process is going to go forward. So we've got quite a number of vegan senators and members of the House of Representatives, like Cory Booker, like Adam Schiff, like Jamie Raskin, like so many others, who are saying this is tobacco was the issue a generation ago, where now every single person knows that tobacco causes cancer. Our diet is the issue today. And we cannot be using our children as garbage disposals anymore. We've got to realize that the foods that we provide for them nourish them today and also dictate their tastes for tomorrow. So the 45-year-old man who's having a heart attack, in his heart was a 7 or 8-year-old kid who was taught in his school to prefer chicken nuggets and pepperoni pizza over healthier choices. It's disgraceful to prioritize money over our kids' health. That has been happening. We can no longer justify it because, frankly, now we know better.
Mm-hmm. And as a skeptic, with all these meat alternatives, as they see the money, because that is the quickest segment of the market that is growing, the organic or the, not necessarily organic, but the vegetarian, vegan market is really growing. And as you said, these companies aren't stupid. They see that. So they're buying up these smaller companies that started with an altruistic mission to create a healthy food. And then these companies come in and make it not so healthy and change it. I mean, Silk is one example, you know, soy milk. When they started, it was all organic. And then, you know, White Wave bought it, I think. I forget which company bought it. But then all of a sudden, it was no longer organic. And you didn't know that. And most soybeans are GMO'd. And so unless you're getting the organic one, it's, you know, you're drinking liquid GMO soybeans. So
although I have to say, there's no shortage of the organic soy milk products. And if by law, if it's organic, it cannot be GMO. And, right. and I think you're right. I think people should look for organic products. Yeah, the industry buyouts are kind of interesting because it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you're right. They can change the chemical or the makeup of the product.
The formula.
On the other hand, they bring something to it, which is that these people know how to distribute. They know how to market. They know how to make things attractive. And so they're taking products and they're putting in front of people who never would wander into the kind of little health food store that's somewhere in the strip mall on the edge of town. So it has been a double-edged sword. But my hope is that good, high quality, completely plant-based products will be distributed very widely, and particularly to people who need them most, which is people who haven't really been considering a healthy diet change yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just gonna do a quick little plug for the Environmental Working Group and Cornucopia Institute. Both have scorecards for some of these alternative products, because like you were saying, there's so many choices for soy, for alternative milk, you know, which ones are good and which ones aren't, which, and, you know, people don't necessarily know that. Many people are just going to pick the cheapest one. So that there's places to go. Do you have places that you recommend people go to find out which products are higher quality than others?
Sure. Well, first of all, if you pick the vegan product, you're going to be way ahead of the game. Frankly, even if it's a processed food and whatever, if you've gotten the animal products out, that is a huge first step. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's good to go further and have foods that are simpler, foods that are organic. That's a really important thing. And you mentioned the Environmental Working Group. They have a great tool that that is often called the Dirty Dozen. And that's they'll look even at produce. Produce, fruits and vegetables, always great. Get them into your diet, the more the better. But let's say I'm picking spinach. Does it matter if it's chemically treated or not? Yeah, it does matter. And so the Environmental Working Group has the list of the foods where it matters the most. For example, if I eat an avocado, it might be pesticide treated, but I'm not going to eat the peel. So I'm going to get rid of all that. Whereas if I eat an apple, I'm going to eat the peel. So if that's not organic, that's going to matter because that's going into my body. So the EWG does have a good list of the foods where it matters the most. I encourage people to take a look at their website.
Yeah, Dirty Dozen, and then the Clean 15 are the 15 ones that don't matter. And avocados, as you mentioned, they're on that Clean 15 list. Yeah, that's really great. So if someone adopts a plant-based diet, you mentioned B12. Is there any other supplements that you recommend somebody take if they are following a vegan diet?
Yeah, well, B12 is really important. It's important for everybody. But if you're vegan, it's really not negotiable. You can go to the health food store and just get the smallest B12 supplement they sell, or if you're using a multiple vitamin, like your kids are taking Flintstones vitamins, there's B12 in them, you're fine. That's good. But vegan kids, vegan adults, they all need B12. There are other supplements that I encourage everybody to think about and that don't really relate to diet. But vitamin D comes up. And whether you're a vegan or whether you are pre-vegan, an omnivore, a person who hasn't yet gotten to a plant-based diet, vitamin D is important for bone health and probably reduces cancer risk. And it doesn't come from foods really to a substantial degree. What it comes from is sunlight. And sunlight on your skin makes vitamin D. But it's wintertime and I live in Alaska or New Jersey, or I'm using a UV blocking suntan lotion, the sunlight on your skin is not making any vitamin D anymore. And so in that case, you need to take a supplement. And most doctors would say about 2,000 international units a day would be a pretty typical regimen. And that's true regardless of diet. A lot of people are running low, as we mentioned earlier, on iodine. And nobody thinks about supplementing iodine. I think that people should consider that. If you're not having seaweed as a part of your regular diet, you might consider an iodine supplement. And they sell it at health food stores and online as kelp quite often. And it might say a great source of iodine. Those are things to think about. But the vast majority of supplements that people take, they probably just don't need at all. You know, you take a B complex. Hey, look at your beans and grains and vegetables. That's a B complex. You didn't really need the pill.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So we're just about out of time. Can you just share with everyone how your website and how to get in touch with you if they have more questions?
Yes, sure. Thank you. Your Body in Balance, the book that we started talking about, is now available on all the online places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Target and everywhere else. You can get it there. But if there's a bookstore in your neighborhood, and if
they support the local, right?
Yeah, if they're ever open again, they would sure love to see you. So I hope people will go in and ask for Your Body in Balance actually at the local bookseller.
Right.
And then our website is PCRM.org. That stands for Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM.org. And if you got an iPhone or an Android, download this app. It's called the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart. It's free, it's multilingual. It's got recipes and menus and cooking videos, and our doctors use it as a patient education tool, but anybody can use it. Free app, 21-day vegan kickstart on your smartphone. It will change your life.
Perfect. And I'll share that on my website and put it out there. Thank you so much. Everyone out there who's joined us today, thank you so much for listening. And it's been a pleasure. And I hope to see you at the CSA Fair this weekend. Bye for now.